afternoon. Welcome to Thursday's edition of Financial Survival, sponsored by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Dave Allen, sitting in for Melody today. For all your gold and silver needs, call us at 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. For the next hour, I'll be bringing you some opinions and commentary on the economic and political news of the day. Today is Thursday, September 30th, 2021. Happy Love People Day. National Love People Day tasks us to understand that unconditional love requires a dedication most human beings aren't given. But when we wholeheartedly love our neighbors with steadfast devotion, the world is definitely a better place. Give it a try. Listen, thanks in advance to our producer and engineer, Todd, all around good man. Let's get started with the market report. Gold, wow. That market rebounded big time today from six-week lows. As the Federal Reserve Chair testified that the U.S. is still far from full employment. All eyes were on Jerome Powell and his cohort, Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen. The duo testified together again, this time before the House Committee on Financial Services, on their agency's responses to the pandemic. And gold quickly saw big double-digit gains this morning as bargain hunters stepped in to buy the dip in prices, and the U.S. dollar index fell to daily lows after surging in yesterday's session. Now, spot gold was last trading at $17.57 and change, up over $30, or about 1.8%. Silver, even a better day percentage-wise, up 2.9%, 63 cents to close at 22.25. Platinum up $14 at $973 an ounce, and palladium up $52, hovering just under 2,000 again at 1,988. Sticking with, background noise, I'm in a different neighborhood today, ladies and gentlemen, different surroundings. So enjoy the background distractions as they come. The two big oil markets were, well, they were mixed. They were largely flat. Let's see, the oil markets, I think we're going to have a barking chain here in a second. It looks as though West International, let's see, where are we? Brent up, Brent was down 13 cents to close at $78.51 a barrel. West Texas crude, up 26 cents to close at $75.09. In the Treasury markets, thanks again to the dollar falling about 0.11, closed at 94.23. All the yields, really, the major yields were down today. 3 month was actually unchanged, but the bellwether 10-year yield down 0.022 to close at 1.517, still holding above that mark. The 5-year down 0.026 to close just below 1% at 0.986. All the other international bond markets were down as well. Now, interesting movement in the paper markets today. We have all three markets were up and down today. September certainly lived up to its rough bear reputation as Wall Street just couldn't wait for the challenging month to come to an end. After rising today right after the opening bell, the Dow Jones closed down 547 points about 1.6%, closed at 33,844. Broader S&P 500 down 52 points roughly, close at 43,08, rounded. And the NASDAQ, which had been up almost all the day, closed down 64 points, we'll call it, to close at 14,449. Most of the other international markets were down as well, except the Shanghai Index, which was up about 0.1%. VIX Volatility Index, notably up again today, 3.5%, now in the 23-plus range, a lot higher than it has been. We'll see if that settles down as October gets underway. In any event, that is today's DGS Market Report, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. It's Thursday. It means another jobless claims report out today from the Labor Department. Initial claims climbed again last week to 362,000. As hiring appeared to remain sluggish while the U.S. battles this drastic Delta variant. Economists had been expecting almost 30,000 less filings, 335,000, the same number as the upwardly revised total from the previous week. Surge in claims from California accounted for much of the gains. Now, the seasonally adjusted total was the highest since the 377,000 for the week ending August 7th. And it indicated that hiring may be slowing again at a time when concerns are growing about the pace of the economic recovery and the impact the pandemic may have heading into the coming holiday season. I mean, who knows what awaits us. Four-week moving average for weekly claims, which smooths volatility in the numbers, did edge lower to 335,750. Continuing claims, which run a week behind the headline weekly number, rose to about 2.84 million, an increase of about 131,000. Although the four-week moving average for that fell to 2.8 million, a slight drop of roughly 16,000. With enhanced unemployment benefits coming to a close, most of them having dropped off around Labor Day, the total of those enrolled under all programs has fallen to about 11.25 million. That's a drop of 856,000. A year ago, close to 27 million Americans were receiving benefits under programs the government had developed to combat the massive layoffs that had occurred just after the pandemic started. As I mentioned, California saw 24,000 plus new claims. Earlier this month, that state implemented a program where those who had been cut off from enhanced aid could file for additional weeks of state benefits. Virginia also saw a big rise with almost 13,000 new filings. Now, hurricane-ravaged Louisiana saw a decline of about 7,300. Now, a separate report today showed that GDP for the second quarter rose 6.7%. That's according to the third and final reading from the Commerce Department, slightly above the previous estimate of 6.6%. Now, keeping with jobs, more than half of restaurant operators surveyed by the National Restaurant Association, the other NRA, say that business conditions are worse now than 3 months ago. The trade group surveyed 4,000 operators 2-3 weeks ago and is using the results to lobby against plans to raise the corporate tax rate and proposed changes to the National Labor Relations Act that would allow fines of $50,000 to $100,000 for labor violations. The association is also asking Congress to replenish the Restaurant Revitalization Fund, which was created last year to help keep the industry afloat. Now, NRA Restaurant Association Vice President of Public Affairs Sean Kennedy told Congress in a letter, restaurants still need help today, and overwhelming them with costly new obligations will only prevent progress in turning the tide of recovery. The Delta variant, plus understaffed restaurants and higher food costs, are among the issues plaguing the industry. Just 9% of survey respondents said business conditions improved over the last 3 months. That certainly isn't welcome news. The surge of new COVID cases over the last 3 months has led to additional uncertainty about customer demand and potential new government restrictions. 45% of survey respondents said their locations weren't open at full capacity for indoor dining. Not a trend we want to hear about as we're going into the colder season in most places in the country. Now, Morning Consult's weekly tracker has found that 64% of U.S. adults feel comfortable dining at a restaurant, so that's still good news. Unsure about how many of those feel they have to wear or are being required to wear a mask. Now, this poll has held steady for the last 4 weeks, but is down 7 percentage points from its high on the 4th of July. Not surprisingly, I'm hearing this from everybody. We saw it ourselves on vacation in the Outer Banks last week. 83% said they're at least 10% understaffed, while almost 40% are missing more than a fifth of their needed workforce. That's a lot. More than three quarters in all said their restaurants are short in staff. In response to the issue, restaurateurs are cutting their hours, slashing menu items, reducing seating capacity, and all that impacts their revenues. And it's a vicious cycle the more the time goes on. Now, menu options are also being impacted by food supply challenges. Only 5% of respondents say they hadn't experienced any supply delays or shortages of key drinks and food over the last 3 months. Total food costs as a percentage of sales has also risen from over 90% of operators, and that's certainly dragging down their margins. Now, the Jack in the Box chain is among many restaurant companies that have announced plans to raise prices to customers as costs for labor and food rise. Outback Steakhouse parent Blooming Brands, on the other hand, has been cutting back on advertising and other promotions. And most operators have a pessimistic view of the next 3 months. 55% of operators said they believe their sales will be lower over the coming quarter. Well, it looks like jobless claims numbers may not get better again, Ash, until next year. But we will see next Thursday. Now, members of Congress had their running shoes on today. They raced to prevent a government shutdown just hours before tonight's midnight deadline. Senate moved first to pass a short-term appropriation bill that would keep the government running through December 3rd. Here we go again. The chamber approved the legislation in a 63-35 bipartisan vote, 15 Republicans joining all 50 D's. Barring, and I do believe, excuse me, that I just saw on the ticker, my ticker news, that the House has approved the plan and is sending it to President Biden for his signature this evening. Now, the legislation includes money for hurricane relief, as well as the resettlement of upwards of 60,000 Afghan refugees. It appears to that it will pass. It has passed, in fact, with bipartisan support. I have not seen the vote in the House if there were any Republicans joining Democrats there. So a government shutdown has been averted. Now, with Congress snuffing out that possible crisis today, it still has another important one looming. Lawmakers still need to raise or suspend the statutory debt ceiling before October 18th, according to Treasury Secretary Yellen, to prevent a possible default on U.S. debt that would almost certainly result in job losses, major economic damage, and a huge drop in the stock market. Democrats who control both chambers of Congress tried to fund the government and suspend the debt ceiling as part of the same bill. But Senate Republicans blocked that legislation, as we reported the other day, even though extending the ceiling doesn't authorize any new spending. Approval would let the Treasury cover obligations approved by Congress last year and this. See what happens with that. There's still a lot of back and forth between progressives and centrists in the Democratic Party in terms of how they're going to tie infrastructure spending, both the real hard infrastructure that it's already passed the Senate. That's the roughly the $1.2 trillion with $550 billion in new money compared with the $3.5 trillion proposal, which is almost certainly going to be reduced to get the votes of centrist Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema. Now, this is interesting news. The U.S. and the European Union have agreed to a rebalancing of global supply chains when it comes to semiconductors, and what could be the first of many trade and tech-focused meetings between the two groups. The U.S.-EU Trade and Technology Council, referred to as the TTC, emerged in the wake of the Biden victory in January as the European Commission, of course the executive arm of the EU, looked to overcome transatlantic disputes in these areas. The Trump administration had slapped tariffs on the EU, and the bloc had been eager to find a solution with the incoming president. Pittsburgh, PA, hosted the group's first gathering yesterday. Preparations for the meeting were held up following Australia's decision to cancel a submarine deal with France, instead opting for a U.S. agreement, which set the French off. French irritation repeatedly watered down the statement issued by both sides at the end of the meeting last evening. I hear some music in the background. It can't be, but it is. The music doesn't lie, ladies and gentlemen. It's time for a break. I hope you'll stick around. We'll be back after a few important messages. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it: to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. CommonSenseVoices.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Financial Survival, sponsored by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Dave Allen. 1-800-375-4188 or online dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Well, we've mentioned this a week ago, maybe 2 weeks ago in one of the programs. Holiday gifts are going to cost more this year. In fact, a lot more, according to a new report from the company Salesforce. Price increases and consumers' willingness to pay them may help manufacturers and retailers' bottom line in a season riddled with shipping and logistics logjams. Businesses have warned consumers to start holiday shopping yesterday, in fact, in order to avoid the worst of the empty shelves and inflated prices that many of them expect come November and especially December. Hasbro and Mattel, both big toy makers, both say they'll meet their full-year earnings forecast despite worsening delays at every level of the global supply chain. Price increases should cover additional expenses, leading the company to expect limited margin headwinds. That's according to a research team from Too Big to Fail Goldman Sachs. Writing about Hasbro last week. And they added that Mattel's price increases in the second half of this year will offset cost inflation from supply chain challenges. Again, pent-up demand for goods as well as record household savings are continuing to translate into strong consumer spending and more corporate pricing power to cover the rising cost of materials and logistics. Consumers will likely be willing to cough up the extra cash for some items, according to Bob Garf, who's VP and GM of retail at Salesforce. But he thinks they'll be buying fewer items overall. Salesforce estimates that price increases could reach 20% this holiday season. The company's been pulling out all the stops to get ahead of the logistical problems. Manufacturers have shipped items earlier than usual in order to build inventory. Some have acquired more shipping lanes or expanded to use both the East and West Coast ports, while also turning to air freight ahead of the big launch dates later this month. But as we told you, I think on Tuesday's program, recent photos and videos show miles and miles of backups, literally dozens of major shipping, container shipping vessels just stacked out at the New York port and Long Beach out west. So, boy, it could take weeks to get all of them unloaded. So it'll be interesting to see. Perhaps this is going to be the year of gift cards in your Christmas stocking or however you celebrate the holidays. Bottom line, no real answer to supply chains when the conditions continue to be what they are. And that uncertainty could keep consumers on the sideline for months more to come. And what isn't good for the economy in this respect should be good for gold and silver. Now, this is one under the category of don't kill the messenger, me. it is interesting in the context of politics and upcoming decisions. Senator Elizabeth Warren questioned Fed Chair Jerome Powell and his record on financial regulation during a hearing on Capitol Hill. This one, I believe, was the other day. She called him, quote, a dangerous man, and said she would not support his renomination for a second term. Now, while the Fed chair's term expires in February, Biden's expected to make a decision later this fall on whether to reappoint Powell or nominate another candidate. D.C. observers say Warren's explicit opposition could impact Biden's decision to stick with Powell versus going with another candidate who may face more opposition from Republicans. Not an easy calculus either way. Warren told Powell during the recent Senate Banking Committee hearing, quote, your record gives me grave concern. You have acted to make our banking system less safe, and that makes you a dangerous man to head up the Fed, and that is why I will oppose your renomination. Now, these remarks echoed previous concerns Warren has voiced about Powell's deregulatory efforts as Fed chair. Powell has garnered support thus far from a number of moderate Democrats as well as some Republicans. Yet more progressive Democrats have urged Biden to go with someone more aggressive on financial regulation and climate change. On top of this week's big Fed trading scandal under Powell's watch, Warren's comments certainly do thicken this plot. More to come for sure in the coming weeks. We'll be here to tell you all about it. Now, briefly, momentum still building in the housing market. If you missed this yesterday, pending home sales skyrocketed in August, far exceeding analyst expectations for around 1% growth. Pending sales or signed contracts had cooled during the prior 2 months, though remained above pre-pandemic levels. The latest figures out yesterday from the National Association of Realtors imply that September's existing home closed sales will be the highest since January. Lawrence Young, who's the quotable chief economist at the Realtors, said that rising inventory and moderating price conditions are bringing buyers back to the market. However, he said, affordability remains challenging as home price gains are roughly three times wage growth. So that is a tad unsettling. Here's an interesting news item. For the first time since Todd Amon's ATBS firm has been tracking fleet and average independent owner-operator salaries, pay levels have cracked an annual rate of more than $70,000. That's on average now. That was a number that came out of ATBS's annual, semi-annual webinar where Amon reviews data on how drivers are doing. The numbers he draws from are from a huge base of financial information compiled through his company's activities, offering tax and other financial services to owner operators and fleets. Amon said, we felt we were at a break-even market. Data suggested that there were 12 loads available for every one truck looking for it. But after 2018, ATBS recalculated the number where supply and demand are in balance. He concluded that number is when there are 32 loads for each truck. So while 12 loads seems, you know, impressive, to 32, well, it's a drop in the bucket. In August 21, Amon said that number went up to 142. For the last year or more, it was in the 125 to 140 loads level. Amon thought in the past that it would be impossible for that ratio to ever get to 150, and here we are closing in on that. Once the market levels off, he added, which he believes will happen at some point, a new break-even level is likely to be somewhere between 50 and 75. That certainly is, seems like a healthy rate for an independent trucker. Now, compared to the first 6 months of last year, part of which includes certainly the pandemic burden months of April and May, one of the worst freight markets ever, ATVS and drivers are running just 1.5% fewer miles. For drivers, their increase in revenue per miles is 4.5% overall compared to last year. The overall rate is up 7 cents per mile to $1.55 per mile. Within that, I think this is not a typo. Reefer is only up 2 cents to $1.40. It must be a trucking slang. Sorry, I don't know what that is. While dry van is up 5 cents to $1.45. All independent drivers are up 11 cents to $1.75 per mile, while flatbed drivers are up 15 cents at $1.94. Now, the increase in net income to more than $70,000 per year is an average figure across all categories of drivers. And that's a gain of $6,500 over the 12-month period. Broken down, independent drivers were up 6,000 to 70,300. Dry van were up 5,700 to 70,000, even roughly. Reefer drivers climbed to 64,000, and flatbed drivers jumped almost 12,000 to 80,500. But Amon added that the top 10% of drivers served by ATDS are making more than $225,000. Per year. That is a lot of driving. I hope they have a good chiropractor. Now, how much better are independent owner-operators doing than fleet drivers, big company drivers? One sharp aim and showed, that the advantage for an owner-operator is now beyond $1 per mile. He said fleets are having difficulty growing. And guess what they're having trouble with? Finding drivers. That staffing problem again. The data showing that as many as 60,000 drivers have been granted new authority so far in 2021. It makes it difficult to grow an existing fleet, Amon said. Out of 200 fleets he surveyed, he knows of only two that have managed to grow. He said barriers to entry are less than ever with the technology available, but these good times have other consequences that just aren't favorable. The truck prices have doubled in the past year. The average driver today is paying $2,500 per month for a truck, and that's not going to change anytime soon. And the squeeze on mechanics means that the cost of maintenance are soaring by up to more than 10%. In the past year. So, all in all, difficult times, particularly for fleet drivers, challenging times to be sure for independents, but it seems that right now they have a leg up. Transportation backlogs aren't the only thing slowing imports. Fewer than 20% of people in most Southeast Asian countries are fully vaccinated for COVID. Which has led to outbreaks and has forced apparel factories there to shut down. And U.S. companies certainly can't change international vaccination rates on their own. The problem illustrates another reason Americans have a self-interest in supporting an effort to vaccinate other countries. Now, that's according to a group of industry trade association whose name I'm sorry I can't find, but Nike CFO Matt Friend says we've already lost 10 weeks of production, and that gap's going to continue until Vietnamese factories are able to reopen and produce product at normal capacity. Also issues in India, Bangladesh, and Indonesia. But there, companies have been able to buy vaccines and provide them to their employees for free. Let's see. I think we'll call it there. Now, let's circle back to the U.S.-EU trade cooperation pact we talked about in the first segment. Again, the EU and the U.S. pulled off a coup of sorts, laying out plans for transatlantic cooperation, protect businesses and consumers and workers from unfair trade practices, especially those posed by non-market economies, meaning China. And also talking about how they're going to deal with the semiconductor chip shortage. The inaugural meeting of the Trade and Technology Council, the TTC, the commerce chiefs and trade reps set out how the economies are going to collaborate in the years ahead. And they say the cooperation will come in areas ranging from screening potentially hostile foreign investments and export controls to artificial intelligence, trade, and ensuring the security, again, of semiconductor supply chains. These developments, they say, are a win-win for both the U.S. foreign policy agenda and Ursula von der Leyen's Digital Europe. That's according, anyway, to Karen Kornblau, director of the German Marshall Fund's Digital Innovation and Democracy Initiative, who also happens to be the former U.S. ambassador to the OECD. Now, Kornblau added, there's a seismic shift in the global economic ground rules underway. There are clearly still tensions, which resulted in less progress on the key digital input of semiconductors than expected, and China's not standing still. But, she adds, if the sides succeed, meaning the U.S. and EU, the result will be greater innovation and protection of human rights and security. Interestingly, we're learning that the meeting in Pittsburgh almost didn't happen after France balked following its loss of the $65 billion Australian submarine contract to the U.S. and U.K. In the end, however, the conclusions of the pivotal trade agreement occurred, but they were narrower in scope than first planned after, well, French Pres Emmanuel Macron wouldn't agree to some of the wording. The TTC meeting was planned as a reconciliation of sorts between the U.S. and the EU after 4 years of transatlantic conflict. Again, in 2018, Donald Trump imposed tariffs on steel and aluminum imports, labeling competition on the metals from the EU a national security threat in the company of China. Of course, Brussels retaliating by targeting American imports with duties on some big brand products like Harley-Davidson motorcycles, Levi Strauss jeans, and bourbon whiskey from Kentucky. Let's stop there. We'll be back in a few short minutes. You're listening to Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cedarstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cedarstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. CommonSenseVoicesOfIntegrity.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And one more time, welcome back to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Dave Allen, sitting in for Melody. I was working on other client business. All right, I got to confess, I'm often good at beating a dead horse when I'm feeling passionate. My wife says obsessed about something. And the Federal Reserve's recent trading scandals, my latest obsession. Last year, during the worst health crisis in more than 100 years, Dallas Fed President Robert Kaplan was frequently throwing gasoline on the fire and broadcast in print media interviews. At the same time, Kaplan was trading in and out of S&P 500 futures, the sophisticated instrument used by hedge funds mainly to time the market and or to short it. Shorting, as you know, means you place a bet that the market or a specific stock or bond or whatever will fall in value. The Dallas Fed won't say if Kaplan engaged in shorting the market during the pandemic. But Kaplan gave 68 interviews with the press in 2020. It's an eyebrow-raising number for a man in his position, also trading S&P 500 futures. Twice in the span of 6 days in May 2020, Kaplan predicted that unemployment was going to surge to 20%. That's a very bold and very bearish call. It also turned out to be fairly accurate if you're talking about the U6 unemployment rate. Regardless, while the maximum U3 headline unemployment rate topped out at 14.8% in April, it was well over 20% if you count discouraged workers. Well, Kaplan made the 20% unemployment prediction on May 1st last year. When the interview on Fox Business started around 8:30 in the morning Eastern Time, Dow futures were down 450 points. By the time Kaplan finished speaking, Dow futures had dropped another 10 points. Well, in addition to the 20% unemployment prediction, Kaplan also described the economic outlook in the interview as an historic contraction, very severe, and noted that the consumer, which we know represents two-thirds of GDP growth here in the U.S., had suffered a body blow. Throwing yet more anxiety into viewers' minds, Kaplan predicted disinflation for both 2020 and 2021. 5 days later, on May 6, Kaplan repeated the 20% unemployment prediction in an interview on Yahoo Finance. The financial disclosure forms for all 12 of the regional Fed Reserve banks instruct the filer to list the month, day, and year of each purchase and sell of a security or asset. All of the other Federal Reserve Bank presidents followed that rule in 2020. Kaplan, however, lists no dates for any stock purchases or sell dates or dates for any of his S&P 500 transactions, which were all over $1 million. In all cases, he simply uses the word multiple instead of providing dates. The Dallas Fed has failed to respond to information requests regarding Kaplan's trading, some of which is more than 5 years overdue to the public. This is requests made by Pam and Russ Martins at Wall Street on Parade. Kaplan previously worked 22 years at one of the most sophisticated trading firms in the globe, Goldman Sachs, are too big to fail. Wall Streeters. He rose to the rank of vice chair and had global responsibility for the firm's investment banking and investment management divisions. The nature of Kaplan's career at Goldman Sachs meant that he was an expert on what moves markets. Nevertheless, he regularly gave market-moving predictions to media outlets during a time of market chaos. Kaplan was also trading in and out of oil stocks last year, including shares of Chevron, Marathon, Occidental, and Valero. According to Kaplan's financial disclosure form for 2020, he made multiple trades in each of these oil stocks in sums over $1 million. On May 28th last year, Kaplan gave an interview to Reuters, which generated a headline that he was predicting, quote, a global oil glut lasting well into 2021, unquote. He also made bearish comment in the interview that many smaller firms and those with lots of debts may not survive. West Texas Intermediate, the U.S. domestic crude oil that trades, had collapsed from a price of $60 a barrel at the beginning of 2020 to about $30 at the time of the interview Kaplan gave. Calling for a global oil glut lasting well into 2021 was not a bullish call for the oil fields in Texas. WTI actually bounced back to its $60 handle early April this year, and it's traded in the mid-$70 range this month. Because of his numerous bearish calls that Kaplan made to the media last year, given his unprecedented trading activity, given his failure to report the dates of his trades as required by the rules of the feds, and given the Dallas Fed's refusal to say if he was shorting markets, our watchdog friends, Pam and Russ Martins, believe the Justice Department should conduct a thorough investigation of this matter and report its findings in a timely fashion. And I must say, my own personal opinion is I agree. The already shaky confidence of the American people in the Fed now hangs in the balance. Now, here's a prediction that's sure to open a few eyes and cause a few stiff necks. Say what? Robert Kiyosaki, best-selling author of Rich Dad, Poor Dad, says all markets, the whole kit and caboodle, Bitcoin, gold, stocks, it's about to face a serious crash in October. Speaking to the editor-in-chief of Kitco News recently, Michelle McCorry, Kiyosaki explained the factors in the economy that have been leading up to this upcoming crash and highlighted the severity of the market downturn that's apparently imminent in his mind. Kiyosaki said it's going to be the biggest crash in world history. We've never had this much debt pumped up. Debt is the biggest problem of all. The debt to GDP ratio is out of sync. So when it comes down and it's going to bring everything down with it, that's when I'm going to be buying more gold, silver, and Bitcoin. This is Kiyosaki again. He adds the S&P 500 is really the S&P 7, and it's being held up by the Secretary of Treasury and the Fed chair. There's no correlation between the economy and what Yellen and Powell are doing. Kiyosaki stressed that this market crash will see prices rebound afterward, but only for certain assets. He says, I'm a little strange in that I like crashes. This next crash is going to be really, really good. It will bring down gold, Bitcoin, stocks, but the good news is a crash is a good time to get rich, adding that he's long-term still bullish on non-equity assets. That's why I'm very optimistic, he continues, and I'm very optimistic on gold, silver, and Bitcoin, but not on stocks. Kiyosaki's comments come, of course, as Congress is considering a vote to suspend the debt ceiling. Again, if Congress fails to come to an agreement before the October 18th deadline, government will risk a default on its existing debt obligations, something that is unprecedented, certainly in modern times. Kiyosaki said that the same forces that have artificially propped up the existing markets, namely the expansion of the money supply, have also created a debt bubble. He added that inflation is unlikely to be persistent. Yellen and Powell are scrambling, he says, is because they've expanded M2, so everybody thinks there's going to be inflation, but the velocity of money is plummeting. People aren't spending, so they pump all this money in, prices go up, so it's transitory inflation. But the problem is, he adds, we're stuck with this massive debt, and it and all it's done is bump up the stock market and real estate market. The money has not gone into the economy. That's the sad part. Well, let me know how you feel about Kiyosaki's observations. Email me, please, at DaveAllen, one word, .usa@yahoo.com. DaveAllen.usa@yahoo.com. I'll read your comments on a future program and respond to them if appropriate. All right, last in today's program, as President Biden's policy failures right now dominate the headlines, one piece of his agenda hasn't reached many mainstream news outlets. His nomination of Office of the Comptroller of the Currency, Saul Amarova, is critical yet barely mentioned in last week's news cycle. We mentioned it here on Financial Survival. The nomination signals the likely direction of fiscal policy, even bleeding into the nominally non-political Fed, and the various ways the federal government could gain control of Americans' banking and spending habits. The Fed increasingly acts as a repository of bad ideas in Washington. Bad housing debt? Have the Fed buy it back to shield big banks from responsibility. Need to prop up the economy? Buy bank bonds through quantitative easing. Pandemic threaten the status quo? Pump more than $4 trillion into the economy, sparking widespread, if transitory, inflation. Supposed independence of the Fed was meant to shield it from the whims of a president or Congress desiring certain policy results. Instead, it increasingly has become a fourth branch of government, especially as politicians try to print their way out of recessions, pandemics, and excessive government spending. Some analysts believe Joe Biden is keen to continue inflation policies, understanding correctly that the Fed's balance sheet is double that of the federal budget. The crucial link between the White House's policy and future Fed policy will run through Saul Amarova, assuming she's confirmed, that is. The immediate effects of Amarova's confirmation could be dramatic, in fact. The Cornell Law School professor, sharply anti-Wall Street, favors stricter oversight, also desires private sector banking to be the purview of the Federal Reserve. Kristen Tate of The Hill said, that's a publication, a daily publication, says such a move would not only be catastrophic to the nation's economy, but several major steps toward central planning and away from the free market. Taken to its extreme, she claims, this would mean that the Federal Reserve, acting on behalf of Washington, could become the only place citizens could deposit their money. That's an interesting thought. Such a massive transformation would be accomplished by replacing consumer deposits into a new digital dollar held by the Fed, and in Tate's own words, radically reshaping the basic architecture and dynamics of modern finance. The risks if the Fed takes over private banking, she feels, are extreme. For starters, it could move to completely ban the use of funds related to cryptocurrency. Cryptos are wildly speculative as an investment, and we caution listeners all the time on this program to not get into them unless you know what you're doing. Well, banning them isn't the answer either. The Fed's control over all bank accounts would also allow sweeping powers over the average person's wallet. A centrally controlled digital dollar could be created instantly and distributed into wallets for welfare and Social Security payments. It also could bar people deemed, well, to be extremists, access to their money. Today we might laugh off the notion of banking access being suspended for calling someone the wrong pronoun, but actual analogs may not be that far off into the future. By taking on the role of regular banking, the Fed could also repeat and magnify all of the worst errors of the banks during the 1990s. And after the during and after the Great Recession, under successive mandates and the Community Reinvestment Act, trillions of dollars were poured into subprime and other risky mortgages to balance racial and economic inequalities? In the near future, if Almirova's desires come into force, the Fed's much larger balance sheet, control over banking, and increased desire for equity could all combine to create a financial crisis far more complicated than 2008. Prior to that financial crash, Washington forced banks into giving riskier and riskier loans to unqualified borrowers. Imagine that process turbocharged by woke rhetoric, far more money than a decade and a half ago, and all of the cash of the Fed Reserve, too big to fail, would meet national insolvency. The increasing use of unilateral actions by the Fed and the executive orders through White House could, over the course of a decade or two, transform the role of the Fed from printing dollars to controlling whether you're locked out of your bank account for buying Bitcoin. Tate and others fear that Biden is opening a proverbial Pandora's box with Almirova. When the big banks were too big to fail in 2008, it was taxpayer money and Fed buybacks of toxic debt that was used as a one-size-fits-all approach. If the Fed gets this nation into another even larger version of that crisis, who would bail us out then? By that point, our democratic capitalist system would already have been consumed by political appointees. Privacy and financial autonomy could become a relic of the past. You think you hate big banks now? Just wait until there's only one of them. Hey, that's all the time we have for today's show. I'll be back on Tuesday. Melody will be back tomorrow with Butch. I'm Dave Allen. Thanks always again to our engineer, Todd. Thanks for listening to Financial Survival. Have a good evening, and please be safe out there. Bye-bye.